This is a special report from ABC News, the Democratic National Convention. I'm Daria Albinger.
After the last 2 days, aren't you proud to be a Democrat?
Former President Bill Clinton among the political heavyweights who were on stage on this third night of the convention. The delegates also hearing from House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries.
Donald Trump is like an old boyfriend who you broke up with, but he just won't go away. He has spent the last 4 years spinning the block.
Oprah Winfrey taking the stage just moments ago, all of these speeches building up to tonight's keynote address from Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, who will formally accept the party's nomination for vice president, and then he'll give what could be the most important speech of his life. This is ABC News.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The Democratic National Convention roll call was full of cameos, music, and even Lil Jon, but Governor Tony Evers had a tough time getting through his lines. People online had a lot to say, but at least he had a good sense of humor.
Yeah. It was all. I mean, it was a mistake. Life goes on.
On Twitter, Evers used his classic holy mackerel. And fans could buy booze for the first time at UW-Madison's Fieldhouse. The Badgers volleyball squad took on Bradley in an exhibition. This year, alcohol will be sold at most athletic facilities on campus, and they're currently in the middle of that rollout. According to the Wisconsin State Journal, there were a few drinks available for about $12, and they were all a big hit. People who appear to be under 40 have to scan their ID, and no one can buy more than two drinks at a time. Alcohol will be sold at Camp Randall for the first time next Friday when the Badgers take on Western Michigan. And that's what you need to know. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson, and this is Civic Media News.
An unsuspecting driver at a Milwaukee barbershop.
I got an apprentice here shadowing me. I'm gonna put this hot towel on, man. About a good 3 minutes, all right?
The apprentice is Donald Driver.
So when you come here, you drive?
Yes.
Your car got seatbelts?
Yeah.
You wear them?
No.
Okay, but why not?
Because I don't want to.
But did you know you can get a ticket for that?
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna give you a ticket. Bet you wish you buckle up now.
Oh my God.
Donald Driver can't always be there to remind you.
Take it, click it. There we go.
Click it or tick it.
And let's reduce fatalities on Wisconsin roadways. Sponsored by Wisconsin DOT.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, Lacrosse's home for the Todd Allball Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is The Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to. Lots to talk about. How many people remember the Obamacare fight? How many people remember going back to the days of the Obamacare duking it out? And understand, a lot of what the Affordable Care Act was, conservative ideology being lessened a little bit. It was the Heritage Foundation's, basically their plan from the early 90s, that ended up getting a lot of attention in here. The idea of personal responsibility, the individual mandate, which then Republicans used as a massive divisive tool, even though their idea, and a lot of this stuff that were meant to so-called cut costs. And look, I completely agree with the personal responsibility idea. Everybody has to be in. In order for a giant pool, an insurance pool to work, you need more people in to mitigate risk. This way, the fewer people are getting benefits out or getting claims paid, more people are paying in, helps the pot grow, gives security to a lot more people. It's a smart idea, and I'm all on board. But there was one thing that even I said, I'm not overly thrilled with. And it was the idea of a Cadillac tax. You may remember this. The idea was they were going to tax healthcare plans that were above a certain number. Me as a union member, we negotiate a lot for generous benefits. We want the best, we want Cadillac healthcare. And I give you an example. When I hit my hip replace back in 2019, it cost me like $120 out of pocket. That's the hospital, the doctor, the therapy. That's everything. That's unheard of in this day and age. Now, look, I pay for it. I pay for it mightily in yearly premiums. And what the Affordable Care Act had put forth was this idea that they were going to tax these plans. And if I remember the number at the time, it was $25,000. So if your health care costs for a family was over $25,000, I think it was like $11,000 or something like that for an individual, or was it maybe $18,000? But you would have to pay tax on that bit above what the allotment was. And the idea was on these Cadillac plans was to tax them a 40% excise tax on the part of the employer-sponsored health insurance premiums above that dollar mark. The thought was a couple of things could happen, that people would maybe not have these really, really generous benefits, that the idea is that I have and I'm going to use just because I have it. I go to the doctor only when it's absolutely necessary, and then it has to be absolutely necessary. But it's interesting to me that Project 2025 has reignited this a little bit. Now, remember, you go back to the Obamacare years. You had John Boehner criticizing it because it would have an impact on workers and employers. You had Paul Ryan against it because it would increase the cost of families. You had Mitch McConnell, who cared. It was going to harm middle-class families. Lindsey Graham was worried about burdening those who had high-cost plans. Ron Johnson, he said it was going to lead to reduced benefits. Marco Rubio, this is detrimental to workers' health care coverage because we care so much. Rick Santorum made it one of his central themes of his presidential campaign, his failed presidential campaign. So you have these well-noted Republicans, a party dead set against it. Now understand, they were dead set against it. Why? Well, because it was Obama's name on it. Anything in there, even though they were all their ideas, anything in there was bad because Obama did it. That's the kind of knee-jerk reaction our politics have become. So now we now have this idea that there's the Cadillac plan. They fought against it, killed it off. But now Project 2025 has revived it. It's back. Only now it's going to be, they're saying, $11,200 or $30,000 per family. So $11,000 per person, $30,000. Or it's $12,000 annually per worker. And then I think $30,000 above that. So it's back. And what's going to happen potentially is either employers are going to give workers higher wages and fewer benefits. That's the kind of the hope. Or what we know is going to happen. They're just going to cut benefits. And the workers are going to shoulder more of the burden coming out of this. And we already know that's going to be the kind of thought that's going to happen, because we've seen it play out in other places, haven't we? Now you go, but Rick, you know, that sounds new. No, this was in the Republican Study Committee's proposal as well. This is a long-standing ideological fight for the right. As I've said a million times, there's nothing really new in this plan. It's that they've put it all together, the hat trick of horrible, the handbag of horrible, right here in one document. So if you want to see what they want to do to your healthcare benefits, it's page 7, by the way, if you're reading along at home. So for me, well worth potentially thinking about, because they're telling us again, they want to tax your benefits. Instead of saying, how do we get more affordable benefits so that we don't have to have these high cost plans? They just want to tax them. I got to tell you, $12,000 a year for health insurance doesn't sound like a lot of money. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Gonna take a quick break. Right back with more of the handbag of horrible.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So for the last couple of months, we've been talking about this Project 2025, which now, look, is the Republican platform. This is what they want to do. This is in extreme detail, 900 and some pages of horrible and how they want to change this country. Everything from eliminating Head Start and the Department of Education and environmental protection to, well, getting rid of overtime protections and ending collective bargaining rights and basically repealing the 20th century. The question becomes, how do we educate union members especially and working people on how bad this actually is? This is why I've asked Jody Callahan to come talk with us. Jody is the AFL-CIO's Director of Advocacy. Jody, thanks for taking time for us.
I'm happy to be here.
So, look, you know, we kind of laid out a little bit of what this Project 2025 is. From your perspective, how bad is this for working people?
It is devastating for working people. It is a blueprint, and I think for what will happen if Trump were to retake the White House. And I want to be very clear about this. This is the real deal. This is what they intend to do. I know Trump is trying to run away from it as fast as he can. The reality is it was written by at least 140 of his former administration officials, ranging from cabinet secretaries to a White House chief of staff and so forth, or a personnel director in the White House. It is people who were in the Trump administration the first go around and will expect to be in it the next go around. And they realized that when he took office back in 2017, he wasn't ready to be president. He handled the whole operation very incompetently from their perspective. And so this go around, they want to make sure they do things the right way and have an orderly implementation of their agenda. And that's why they spent more than 900 pages detailing that agenda and what needs to happen. So this is the real deal. And if Trump takes office, these are the things we will see. And it's not just the changes in regulations and so forth. It is a reimagining of our working lives.
No, it's a fundamental shift of what America is. This is, like I said, repealing the 20th century. But, you know, the arrogance of putting this down in paper, the arrogance of talking about it in public, because look, these ideas, I'm sure you know this as well as anyone, there's nothing in this 900 plus page document that's really new. This stuff's been banging around in these right-wing think tanks for at least a generation. It's just now they finally see someone in Trump who's willing to move that agenda or allow them to use government in a way to move that agenda.
I would say there is a little bit of newness to this. You're right that there is a ton of stuff in here we've seen a million times before over the last few decades. It is a wish list of anti-union, anti-worker organizations when it comes to things like eliminating health and safety rules or getting rid of overtime pay. That's all in there. And we've seen that many times before. But there's a lot more when you take a step back and take a look at the entire picture here. There's even more nefarious things going on. The way in which they attack civil rights and undermine the civil rights enforcement and then take Title VII inside, which is enforced by EEOC, and turn it on its head so that it will go after things like diversity, equity, and inclusion programs in workplaces. These are new things that are coming from a very extreme far-right vision for what America should look like. So what we have is them plowing the ground by making workers desperate and more insecure, by getting rid of doing things that will lower wages and benefits and rights in the workplace. And then divide the workplace, divide the workforce by going after people's civil rights and doing things to make sure everyday racism and sexism is alive and well in the workplace. So you now have a divided workforce and a very sort of an insecure workforce.
Yeah.
And beyond that, though, then they go after unions in a particular fashion, which is extraordinary when you piece it all together.
I mean, you're going through all these things, and in my mind, I'm going, yeah, this is stuff that they've been wanting to do for 100 years now. They want to, like I said, repeal the 20th century and move us back to the good old days of the 80s and 90s, and not the 1980s and 90s. This is the Jay Gould. I can pay half the working class to murder the other half. This isn't new, but it's just a new tactic and a new way of going about it. And sadly, one that some portion of the American people seem to be a little bit okay with.
Well, when you piece it together, this is what I'm starting to see, is that they, you know, on top of what I just mentioned, they want to eliminate public sector unions altogether, which isn't new. You're right. When it comes to private sector unions, they want to explicitly weaken them. And then replace them with company-controlled unions, so that within the private sector, there may still be some version of a union, but it's more like a club that does what the boss wants. So those would still exist. And then the employers that they will privilege are religious employers, and they will give religious employers the ability to trump any rights you might have. So a worker would have to conform to the boss's religious views if they want a job or want to keep a job or get a promotion and so forth. So there's this vision of a very insecure, divided workforce in this country with less rights, less pay, less benefits, reliance upon religious employers who will dictate how one should live, and clubs of private sector workers who will probably be some sort of power center supporting this right-wing vision. No public sector unions, and therefore no check on government power, which, you know, public sector unions are our whistleblowers when they see things going wrong in the government. So it's important that public sector workers have a voice if we want to have a democracy.
Yeah.
It is a vision that is not America. It is something else.
Well, I would argue it's the America of 100 years ago. It's the benevolent dictator that Henry Ford was. It's the patronage government of the past that, you know, be loyal to the top of the ticket and maybe you'll get a job, and having those wide swings, which when you break this down for average voters, and I've had a number of these personal conversations, nobody seems to think, when you're talking to them individually, that this is a great idea. No one thinks that returning to these horrible policies of the past and putting them into one giant weaponized package, no one seems to think that that's a great idea. So you guys at the AFL-CIO, I'm sure you're out knocking on doors. I'm sure you're out talking to people across the country. Are you getting the same kind of sense, the same kind of reaction back, that the more people learn about this Project 2025, the more that they're going to repel it?
Yes, it is deeply unpopular among any part of the American population, but especially among workers who understand what their rights are and how hard it was to win these rights that we have today. I think the key is for working people to understand how it will affect their bottom line. And I'd love to give you an example of how it will affect a union member's bottom line, which is, one of the provisions or the proposals in this Project 2025 is that they want to make federal employment laws negotiable at the bargaining table. In other words, we have a minimum wage, you know, set by the federal government, by federal law. We have health and safety regulations. They want to say that you can negotiate out from underneath those things at the bargaining table. So let's say everybody who's a union member listening to your show right now, we all have a contract coming up at some point. We all have a hope that in that contract negotiation, we will get a 10% raise or whatever raise we're aiming for. When you show up to bargaining under Project 2025, the employer could say, as their opening wage proposal, we are going to pay you 10 cents an hour and not pay you any overtime. That's our opening proposal. Bargain up from that. And so unions will have to fight like crazy to just get back up to the minimum wage.
Yeah.
You know, forget that raise you were hoping for. This is all designed to make union contracts less generous and cut wages and benefits, because they want to replace them with, oh, look over here, there's a company union that you can belong to and be a part of that will not negotiate with the employer.
Or as I've been calling them,
your voice and your interests at heart.
Yeah, as I've been calling them,
they're gunning for
suggestion box unions. But, you know, you make an interesting point on the negotiation side. And I don't think a lot of people, I know a lot of my union friends think that they're going to be okay. That, you know, hey, my union's been doing this all along. It's going to be, it's all hyperbole. My union's fighting for me. We got a good contract last time around. I can now have the luxury of voting on other issues, be it guns or abortion or same-sex marriage or who uses what bathroom or whatever divisive issue they throw out at us. Is this a moment where maybe working people should start going back to where my grandparents were? And it's you vote your job, you vote your paycheck, you vote what puts a roof over your head and clothes on your kids' back. Is this that kind of moment?
Absolutely. I think it was Walter Reuther who said what we win at the bargaining table can be lost at the ballot box. And this is a prime example of that rule, which is they want to empower employers to bust their unions. There was the proposal I just mentioned about bargaining from like 10 cents an hour and being able to put what today would be an illegal wage proposal on the table from an employer. There's also a proposal that says that gets rid of the contract bar under the NLRA. And what that means is in the middle of your contract, an employer could bust your union, push and encourage in the ways that they do employees to decertify your union. And at that moment, in the middle of your contract, you lose your contract, you lose your union wages, your benefits and your protections in one fell swoop. It's all about busting unions, all about making sure union contracts are less and less generous.
Well, I'm sure you just saw the other day in the what was one of the most bizarre interviews I've ever heard, Elon Musk and Donald Trump, you know, stammering and stuttering over each other to figure out who's going to stick whose head up, which other person's behind. The little gem came out that from Donald Trump saying that, Elon is the greatest cost cutter. You know, when those workers went on strike, you went and fired them all gone. For me, that should be playing on a loop in every unionized workplace. That alone should be that thing that says Trump is a vote for Trump is something that a working person should never entertain because of that statement right there.
Yep. Donald Trump is no friend of workers. And I think he got comfortable in that interview and was going on and on and on. It was an amazing period of time, which listening to two men who knew nothing about what they were talking about, but felt like they had an opinion that they needed to share on every single subject. But this was, these are Donald Trump's true colors. He admires union busters. He admired a billionaire, a fellow wealthy person firing workers for engaging in their fundamental human right to just engage in concerted activity for their mutual aid and benefit.
Right.
He admires Elon Musk for firing people because they decided to speak out.
Now, let me ask you this, because, you know, we've seen Trump's record. In fact, you know, my union, the Teamsters Union, the general president went and spoke at the RNC. And for that and for my disagreeing with that, we're basically on the outs because my fear had been that he was going to normalize what Trump's record was. I now see a lot of my Teamster brothers finally coming around to going, wait a second, the Trump era wasn't great. Is this a good opportunity, I mean, for Kamala Harris to take a look at the Trump years, especially for labor, and the Biden years and go, there's never been clearer distinctions between two ideological goalposts than there are between Trump and the Biden-Harris camp. As the director of advocacy, is this not something that should be on billboards somewhere? Something we should be screaming from mountaintops?
We are doing that now in communities across the country to make clear the contrast between what was the Trump administration and the Biden-Harris administration. We're doing that as much as possible. It is so clear, given the fact that this Elon Musk interview where he is praising Elon Musk for firing striking workers, you can contrast that with the fact that Joe Biden walked picket lines. For the first time ever, a sitting president went out and walked a picket line with the auto workers. Kamala Harris decided to do a swing through, very union cities when she announced, when she started her campaign just in the last couple of weeks, and picked one of our union brothers, Tim Walz, to be her running mate. He has walked picket lines in Minnesota for nurses. He walks one of the Stellantis picket lines, and he has one of the most, aggressively pro-worker records as a governor of a state, we've seen in recent years. So she is, it's a difference between night and day between Harris and Trump, Harris Walz versus Trump Vance when it comes to working people's issues. Yeah. And this is not, like you said, one of these elections where you can vote on other issues and ignore the economic issues. If you're a working person, the pocketbook issues, because Donald Trump is bad news for working people's bottom lines.
This isn't one of those elections where they're all the same. No, very, very different indeed. And you brought up Tim Walz, who I got to tell you, I'm not sure if they made that guy in a Petri dish, but I don't think there's a more perfect pick to be her vice presidential candidate than that guy. I mean, hits every box that I've been saying Democrats need to check off. The ability to talk to rural voters and maybe move some rural voters into the camp of worker issues, I think is fabulous.
I totally agree. He feels like everybody's Midwestern dad.
He's that guy you want to, I know it's a stupid line, but he's the guy you want to have a beer with or several. So last line of questioning I've got for you, because, we're moving quickly towards the convention. I know labor will be front and center in a lot of the discussions, and it's going to be the kind of messaging event that I think is going to be important to compare and contrast these two different styles. In your opinion, in your thoughts, if you're the guy with the magic wand, what are the things, what are the top three things voters should know about Trump? And then also, and how Harris compares in those worlds.
Okay, so the top three things, well, I'd say Donald Trump effectively two accomplishments while he was president, and that shows what he prioritized. The first accomplishment he had was he cut taxes for the rich. That was priority number one for him. Priority number two was packing our court system with right-wing judges that have managed to take away lots of our rights, especially in the labor and employment realm. But across the board, the American people have lost rights thanks to his appointments in the judiciary. And then number three, he is a union buster. He has, like you said, he admires companies that will fire workers for speaking out. That's the kind of person and the kind of behavior Donald Trump admires. So he's not going to stick up for working people. Whereas Kamala Harris, and as being part of this Biden administration, they have made a difference left and right when it comes to working people. Pulling us out of the pandemic and the downturn that was happening around the pandemic, the amount of investment, the actual investment in real infrastructure projects, not the infrastructure weeks that Donald Trump would claim were existing and nothing would happen, but in fact, money has been moving. Shovels have been hitting the dirt and jobs have been created thanks to the Biden-Harris administration, putting lots and lots of Americans to work, having some of the lowest unemployment we've seen, sustained unemployment that we've seen in our lifetimes. And the work that Harris in particular did, making recommendations in a White House task force to make sure the entire federal government is looking out for workers every time they do anything, whether they're contracting, dealing with a contractor or putting out grants or awards, think about the impact this will have on working people and make sure you are promoting good jobs when you spend the taxpayer dollar. She has been a critical part of that kind of agenda. And she frankly broke the Senate tie. She was a tie-breaking vote on lots and lots of Senate votes where, we were putting in to place better judges for our judiciary. judges who come from working class backgrounds, who might have represented workers, not just judges who represented the executive suites of big corporations.
Again, the choice never more divided. The posts never further apart, in my view. There seems to be only one choice in this election. But Jody, I appreciate you taking time for us, sharing your knowledge and your passion. Thanks so much.
Thank you. I really appreciate you having me.
Jody Calamine, AFL-CIO's Director of Advocacy. You want to check out their work, AFLCIO.org. You can see all the great things that they're doing. Also follow them on social media. I want to hear your thoughts. Do you see the difference? Or are we still stuck on those divisive issues? I want to hear it. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Right back. Stick around.
and do the blocking and tackling. One inch at a time, 1 yard at a time, one phone call at a time, one door knock at a time, one $5 donation at a time. Look, we got 76 days. That's nothing. There'll be time to sleep when you're dead. We're gonna leave it on the field. That's how we'll keep moving forward. That's how we'll turn the page on Donald Trump. That's how we'll build a country where workers come first. Healthcare and housing are human rights. And the government stays the hell out of your bedroom. That's how we make America a place where no child is left hungry, where no community is left behind, where nobody gets told they don't belong. That's how we're gonna fight. And as the next president of the United States always says, when we fight, when we fight, when we fight, thank you. God bless.
Now go out there and run 10 laps, team.
Coach Walls wrapping it up, third night at the DNC.
It has perhaps not been quite as climatic as some of the earlier evenings, but only by varying degrees, Dom. A lot of big speakers tonight. We saw Bill Clinton, the former president, Nancy Pelosi, the former Speaker of the House, Oprah Winfrey. We promised you, Oprah. You got an Oprah. You got an Oprah. And, of course, John Legend and Sheila E. It was a wonderful performance. And we've got, of course, Governor Tim Walz. They're bringing Gwen Walz to the stage. She was crying within the first couple minutes of the speech.
A very emotional and happy family, the Walz family.
And
I made it back this time, you guys.
And we've got Patty
Vasquez. I felt so bad that I've been blowing you. It seemed like I was blowing you off. It was a great night. Hi, guys. What'd you think?
Hi, Patty.
Hi.
We thought it was an incredible evening. I mean, it was hard to top last night's dual forum and performance and perhaps the greatest political night in the history of conventions. But tonight's pretty damn good as well.
I liked it. Look, I mean, and Sheila E., man.
Right?
66 years old and rocking it. That was amazing. I thought it was a good night.
It was great, and it reminds me, the bench on the Democratic side is so deep and so qualified.
Yes.
It was amazing to see all the folks tonight.
I don't know if you heard,
Patty. You go.
Coach Walz won a state championship in 1999. Mankato West.
I interviewed two of his former students. One was a student and one woman who had gone to the same school but knew him because he would shake, like he would wear a dress shirt and a tie every day, shake the students' hands as they came in to make them feel important. Paid for, like she said, that if they didn't have enough money for lunch, he would buy you lunch so you didn't feel that shame. It was great. So there are at least 40 alum of the high school that he taught and coached. So that was wild.
Yeah,
they were super sweet kids.
It was great to see the high school football players reliving their glory. They came out there on the stage, and now a broad Walz family has joined Governor Walz on the stage. A lot of kids, a lot of friends and family up there on the stage. He, Tim Walz, with his wife Gwen, they're going to stage left. They're waving to the crowd. He's a very animated guy, is he not?
He is. Tight speech, too. I mean, a lot of the things we've seen at rallies, not that long. What was it, maybe 20 minutes?
Nope. Well, they say he's never used a teleprompter historically.
Oh.
So this might be one of the first prepared speeches, teleprompter speeches, that Coach Walz has ever given. But he said, I've not given so many speeches like this, but I've given a few pep talks.
That's right. You know, there are photos now of Governor Walz running in Chicago at Millennium Park, and it's wild. I mean, I haven't seen energy for a vice president like this. I can't remember.
Ever? Right. Yeah.
Can you remember anybody getting jacked up about a vice
president? No.
I mean, and
Trump's not even excited about his own VP pick, J.D. Vance.
And all due respect to Governor Shapiro, but if she had chosen him, it would have been a little bit Tim Kaine 2.0. A little, I mean, he's great, but not, I mean, there's something about this guy that really connects with folks, and I love it.
He is a very everyman, and
very genuine.
When you hear his students tell about how he's affected their lives, I mean, We've got a governor in the state of Wisconsin who's a former school teacher. I think it makes for an interesting and a great resume. You find out he's a compassionate and empathetic human being. And there are so many examples of this. You know, not only is he a state champion in high school football, he's also a seventh grade state champion track coach. And he only took the job. One of his students told that story on him.
He coached them in junior high, and that team went on to win the state championship.
And part of the reason why he took that seventh grade coaching job is so he could pay off kids' lunch debt.
Oh, dear.
I know.
I do have a question.
This guy's real, Patty.
He is real. I do have this question for the rest parts of the country that don't have snowbanks. Do you think they get what it means to be pushed out of a snowbank? Right. Like, are they confused? Like, maybe your knee, your
neck
deep.
That's like picking right? up a relative at the airport at midnight.
Yes.
That's sort of a big deal.
In the freezing cold.
In the freezing cold.
And with a lot of energy. Like, maybe
physical
some
effort.
Yeah, it's maybe some cardboard boxes, maybe some cat litter. We don't know. That was amazing.
And
that was fun.
One more day. Tomorrow.
One more
day.
Day
four. Tomorrow is Kamala Harris's day. And, I mean, I don't know how you're going to top Oprah Winfrey.
That was good. That was a solid speech, too. We did not all get cars in the arena, so don't feel left out. But I think she did a great job with the storytelling, with the framing. I thought it was great.
Well, had she given the delegates cars here in Chicago, she's doing them no favors. $62 to park downtown. I can't afford the parking, Oprah. Keep the car.
Fair enough.
Patty Vasquez. Alex here from WCPT. We should probably wrap our coverage up here pretty soon.
I made it back.
We'll take a photo so your boss knows you.
Yeah, right?
Working late.
I'm clocked in. No, I was actually in the press box, and I forget sometimes. I've been in the press box for years, and, you know, there's no emotion. You're not supposed to clap or, you know, we're observers. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and dip out. But I also thought he was hitting a lot of the same things we've seen at rallies. I've listened to all those speeches. So I was like, you know what? I think it's a good time for me to go. So it was great to hang out with
you
guys.
Well, Coach Walls,
thank you.
Excellent delivery. And we should thank you, Patty, for letting us join you here on the WCPT airwaves. The sponsors of the DNC on WCPT is Credo Mobile. Credo Mobile, better for all people and the planet. And Fazio Insurance in Will and DuPage Counties. Contact Fazio Insurance, 815-727-2611 or FazioInsurance.com. And the Devil's Advocates would like to acknowledge Chad's Design Build. They put us on the road.
Thank you, Chad.
The freedom. What are we calling it? For the love of democracy. We should call it for the love of freedom, for the love of the DNC tour. But thank you, Chad's Design Build. Thank you to everyone who stayed up late here with us listening on WCPT 820 AM, KTNF 950 AM, and, of course, all across the great state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Network. We will do it for you. Day four, it's tomorrow. Bring the popcorn, tell a friend, tune in right here. WCPT will now return you to your regularly scheduled program. And once again, thank you, Alex, for the help this evening.
Thank you, Alex.
Back to Stephanie Miller.
When we fight, we win.
Eagle 1490 AM. This is your hometown radio, refreshed. Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Mostly clear skies developing in the overnight with light winds, lower 50s to start your Thursday. By afternoon, more clouds across the area, light south winds, highs of the upper 70s, more cloud cover around the area Friday. Currently 62 degrees.
Covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matinair on Air with Jane Matinair. Weekdays 10 till noon on the Talk of La Crosse. Eagle 1490 AM WLCX and on the Civic Media app.
The first time seeing my son, I feel like my life did a 180. He really a definition of like why he loves somebody.
Through all the fatherhood's firsts, never stop being a dad. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as we wrap up day two here in Chicago, lots of interesting emails, lots of folks responding to some of the things that we've seen here on the program. We've seen
great a convention, and the great part about it, it's been mostly positive. The hope and joy thing seems to be catching on. Seems to be something folks really are interested in. So appreciate the reaching out. Appreciate the email. Way too much to get through. But this idea that it's about making lives better, this is the focus. That we came here thinking they were going to get a hammer on, because of course, it makes sense, right? Ultimately, I think, you know, Rick Wilson, we were talking to him earlier, hit on something that I think I'd like my Republican friends to think about. Because Rick's conversion away from the rhetoric that my generation basically force-fed is that, you know, conservatism is about tax cuts. Republicans have put all of their eggs in the tax cut basket and pushed, you know, again, as much as we can do to make corporations happy, as much as we can allow them to consolidate, as much as we can allow them to deregulate. And this has created the environment in which we find ourselves. So I again, as I said about, you know, Joe Biden for the last 2 years, this guy transformationally is moving us away from that kind of model. 40 years of Republican policy, 40 years of bad ideology, and back to what his generation understood, which is if workers have power and corporations have power and you bring them together on an equal plane, they usually come out with a good agreement. And we have a decent society. Now, I do find it interesting, some of the blowback that I've gotten, and it's been mostly from my brother Teamsters, who are angry over my position on President Sean O'Brien, whom I absolutely supported. And the work that they're doing in organizing and bringing people together and fighting for good contracts is fantastic. The sad reality is the distraction was his appearance at the RNC and the whole, you know, thumbs up thing with Trump. I wish we could spend more time on the let's make lives better. And, you know, Monday night you saw working people, a wide array of diverse working people coming together and moving us in a direction that I think is going to be very helpful. Now, you know, in talking with Rick Wilson, I go back to this education, because I want there to be a functional Republican Party. You know, as I was listening to Rick talk about, hey, you need labor unions. You need that balance. You need them to be able to say, hey, we demand a portion of the profits that we make. And when he said, look, and I think one of the most important quotes out of, you know, the working class of this country, especially the red hat folks right now, have been sold on this idea that it's the black and brown communities, it's the others. They're the reason that life hasn't turned out the way it was supposed to. They're the reason our wages are going down. They're the reason that we've been struggling to make ends meet. It's them. And as he said, look, McKinsey is responsible for more job losses than anyone. Because you're pushing this ideology of let's seek the cheapest labor in the most exploitable countries. Bad policy? Yes, absolutely. But a corporatist mentality that, look, quite frankly, as I pointed out to Rick, Democrats were part of as well. I was never a huge Bill Clinton fan. The DLC did not do any favors for working people. This idea that you're going to train your way out of all these job losses is, well, just ludicrous. And I go back to, you know, my experience growing up in Cleveland, watching the deindustrialization, watching the steel mills close, watching the machine shops close, watching those auto factories pare down to where they're just a mere shadow of what they once were. The idea of redundancy and getting rid of people, that to me is, that's the lesson from what Rick had to say. And the hope is that we listen to that. I would love to have a Republican Party with Rick Wilson at the head of it. Do we agree on everything? No, not even close. And that's a good thing, because I think you do need to have, you need to have both sides at the table. I don't want the pendulum to swing too far one way or the other.
call me a centrist if you have to, but I know that you can bang out the best agreement if you have to. Our political system has given both sides cover to not get things done for working people, and that's where a lot of this anger is. But I go back to the statement by Rick, you know, that we've allowed a media culture to spring up. The right-wing messaging mastery machine has honed in on this message of it's them. It's the other. Where we used to know. We used to know which side we were on. We used to see the corporate excesses. We used to see the billionaires who, you know, in the case of Elon Musk, fire striking workers. Our history is riddled with rich people hiring working class people to go after other working class people. That divide and conquer, it works. And the hope is that while we're here, some of the messaging gets out. Now, how many Republicans, how many of my red hat friends are watching any of this? Very little. But they should. I watched the RNC convention because I wanted to see what the Republicans were bringing to the table. And there wasn't much. In fact, you know, not a lot of star power there either. You know, the Democrats here have put together a very impressive program. Now remember, as I've said from the start, this is about political theater. This is putting on the best face. This is about getting Kamala Harris and Tim Walz elected. That's what this is about. But it's also about saying, what kind of a vision? What direction do we want as a country? And that comes back to us, doesn't it? What kind of a country do we want? Do we want one where we want to encourage families to have children, help them with paid medical leave, help them with child care, make sure that the education their children get is second to none, make sure that they don't have to worry about health security and retirement security down the road? Maybe just a thought. These are things we can and should be doing, without question. In the richest country in the history of humanity, we shouldn't be struggling the way working people are. I ran into a good friend while I was here. He sought me out, and we had a lovely conversation. And one of the things he hit, because he moved to the UK, one of the things that he hit me with that I wasn't prepared for was, he goes, you know, I love London. I'm never coming back. He goes, you know, I pay 4%, 4.5% tax, and I have health care for my entire life. He's an American living in London. His wife is with him as well. They're about to have children. So 4.5%. That's it. And you go, what do I pay as a portion of my income? What is it that I get? Wait a second, hold on. Somewhere in the 18 to 25%, about 24% is what we pay for our health care. So when you stop and you think about what could be with smart policy, with sound investment, what could we do? Could we have a social safety net that would encourage families to have children? Because look, the right, J.D. Vance kept talking about, you know, what is it about the women who are childless, something about, I don't know. Not all of us have mother-in-laws who can take a year off to come spend raising our children. Not all of us, like Trump, can hire nannies to take care of our children. Working people have real struggles. And out of this convention, I think we're going to see a lot of that, a lot of the discussions around that. On day one, we saw a lot of discussions around abortion rights and reproductive rights, which rightly so, it is a major issue. And you know, I was just reading the news the other day that said, you know, moderate white women are flocking to Kamala Harris. What kind of a country do we want? And I bring that up time and time again, because the emails I've gotten, you know, people are like, yeah, we want strong labor rights. Yeah, we want strong voting rights. We want strong protections in the workplace and strong protections for consumers. We want a government that's going to work for us. And I think that's the that's the thing. Because as I had this conversation with this friend, he goes, look, you know, the government helps. That you get things for your tax dollars. You get health care. You get retirement security. You get help raising your children. So that while you're off working, you're not worried that the end is near. So, again, I come back to this moment of what kind of a country do we want? Where do we go from here? And how do we get to that place? That's the question. If you didn't get a chance to listen to Joe Biden's speech, I highly, highly suggest you do. Well worth the time, well worth the effort. If you missed any of today's program, make sure you download the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you will find ours. And as always, I appreciate you being here. Hope you've enjoyed our coverage thus far of the convention. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. We'll be back in the studio next week. Tomorrow, back here from the United Center here in Chicago. And hopefully we don't get hung up in security again. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick. At rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com, as we're here at the United Center in Chicago for the DNC convention. As you know, as you've been paying attention, hope you've been paying attention, this is where the action is. And as I said, what I love about coming to these places, you run into people that, well, you've known in the past, you've had on the program in the past, maybe forgotten about a little bit, and that's why I'm just thrilled to have my next guest, Mandela Barnes. You may remember Mandela ran for Senate back in 2022. We saw him on the tour when we were in Wisconsin in 2022 for the Working Class Heroes Tour. Former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, of course. Happy to take time. Glad I saw you when I first walked into the convention center. If I look like all dazed and confused, it's because I was dazed and confused.
No, that's the great thing. I don't know how we got the spot we got, but
you have prime seating.
It is clean living.
Yeah,
I'm telling you that. But how you been? What have you been up to?
So I've been really good. You know, obviously not doing the thing that I wish I could have been doing.
Soaring high above La Crosse. This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.